Okay, let's dive in. Today we're taking a really deep look at Eckhart Tolle's life, his philosophy.
Right. It's quite a story.
Yeah, it is. We've gone through the sources, tracing, his journey from some pretty intense personal struggles to becoming this global spiritual figure. We're looking at his core ideas, the impact they've had. And really, our mission for you today is to pull out the key nuggets, the important stuff from all this material.
Right, to help understand what makes his work, well, resonate with so many people.
Exactly. And also what some of the challenges or critiques are.
And what's really striking, I think, from the start is how much his teachings are like completely tied to his own life
You
story.
mean it wasn't just theoretical?
Not at all. It feels like it was really forged in some profound personal suffering, real anguish.
So let's unpack that. What actually shaped him? He was born Ulrich Tolle, right? Post-war Germany.
Yeah, and his early life, sources say it was marked by a lot of anxiety, depression. He talked about a difficult family situation.
And then he moved to Spain at 13 and kind of dropped out of formal education for a while.
That's right. Quite a long while, actually. He didn't go back until he was 22. Instead, he just pursued his own interests, philosophy. He was really into this mystic Bogyanra.
Wow. Okay, so self-directed learning. But it wasn't all smooth sailing.
No, far from it. This whole period apparently led to like really deep despair by the time he was 29. And that's when in 1977 he had this inner transformation he talks about.
The big one.
The big one, yeah. He describes being suicidally depressed, this just almost unbearable dread.
Horrifying.
And it led to this thought, I cannot live with myself any longer, which then sparked a crucial question in his mind. Am I one or two?
Am I one or two?
Yeah. And that question, that realization, it just stunned his mind to silence. The whole mind-made self, as he called it, just sort of collapsed.
Collapse.
He woke up the next morning feeling this profound peace, saw the dawn light, felt like it was love. It really shows how sometimes extreme suffering can be, well, his words, a portal into presence.
That's an incredible story. So after that happens, what next? I mean, how do you just go back to a normal life? Did he finish his studies?
Well, that's the thing. He didn't. He actually abandoned his doctoral study.
Really?
Yeah. And spent about 2 years just sitting on park benches in what he called deep bliss, just watching the
Just
world.
watching for 2 years.
Apparently so. His family thought he was, irresponsible, maybe even insane, understandably, maybe.
I can imagine. Okay, so park benches, then what? How did he become Eckhart Tolle?
Right. He changed his first name to Eckhart. It was an homage to Meister Eckhart, the 13th century German mystic.
Okay.
And then he started counseling people, but just in small groups initially.
Got it. So how did it explode into this global phenomenon, the power of now? That was the big one,
That
right?
was the catalyst, yeah. But it started small, kind of a grassroots thing pushed by a student.
Okay.
The real turning point was 2000. Oprah Winfrey recommended it.
Ah, the Oprah effect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Suddenly, it's on the New York Times bestseller list. And then, in 2005, she picked his next book, A New Earth, for her book club.
And that launched that huge online webinar series, didn't it?
Massive. 10 weeks, millions of downloads. That partnership with Oprah, that was really the engine behind his global success, no question.
It does create this sort of interesting paradox, though, doesn't it?
How so?
Well, his whole message is about detaching from ego, from worldly success, but it's packaged in this hugely successful commercial way.
That's a fair point. It's a tension people definitely notice. I think if we link it to his core ideas, he'd likely distinguish between the form and the attachment.
Right.
He talks about clock time, practical, needed for appointments,
Sure.
versus psychological time, the mind just compulsively obsessing over the past or the future. That's where the misery comes from, he says.
And the antidote is presence, the now.
Presence in the now, that's the core. Finding that stillness, regardless of external circumstances, even commercial success.
Okay. And he defines the ego in a specific way, too.
Yeah, as that false illusory sense of self that comes from the unobserved mind, it thrives on separation, always needing more.
And the pain body, what's that?
He calls it an energy field of old, unresolved emotional pain. It kind of lies dormant, then gets triggered and feeds on negativity.
Okay, so he diagnoses the problem, the ego, psychological time, pain body. Does he offer solutions, like practical things?
He does. He calls them portals to presence. Things like observing the thinker.
Just noticing the voice in your head.
Exactly.
Right.
Witnessing it without getting caught up. Also, inner body awareness, feeling the energy inside you. and surrender and acceptance, accepting the isness of the moment.
And his book sort of evolved these ideas, right?
Definitely. The Power of Now laid it all out. A New Earth talked more about collective awakening. Stillness Speaks was more like short meditative pieces.
And that one with the cartoonist, Guardians of Being.
Yeah, with Patrick McDonald. Using animals, like cats and dogs, as examples of beings who live naturally in the Gigo. A clever way to illustrate it.
But it hasn't all been smooth sailing. There have been criticisms.
Oh, absolutely. Significant ones.
The main one seems to be this idea of spiritual bypassing. Can you explain that?
Sure. It's the criticism that people might use these spiritual ideas, presence, acceptance, to kind of avoid dealing with real psychological issues or even, you know, real world problems and responsibilities.
Like disengaging instead of fixing things.
Potentially, yeah. It raises a big question. Can pure introspection really solve complex suffering that might need therapy or social action?
Or just facing difficult truths.
Right. Critics also point to some claims that aren't really backed by science, like consciousness being separate from the brain, or this idea of a pure, timeless moment maybe being neurologically impossible.
And theological critiques, too.
Yes. Some argue that even though he talks about getting beyond the ego, the focus is still very much on individual peace, maybe a kind of self-centered quest, rather than, say, submission to a higher power, as understood in traditional religions.
So wrapping this up, what's the takeaway for you listening to this? Tolle's legacy, it's huge. You can't deny that.
Undeniable.
Yeah.
He took concepts from ancient spiritual traditions, mainly Eastern ones, and made them simple, secular, very accessible. Mindfulness, presence. He brought these into the mainstream for millions.
He really did.
His work definitely marks a big moment in popularizing that kind of thinking in the West.
Yeah.
And the debates around it, the tensions we talked about, those will continue.
For sure.
But the appeal is clear.
Yeah.
He makes something like transcendence feel.
Yeah.
Well, feel like it's right here. Accessible now.
So maybe the final thought, the provocative question for you to ponder is this. How do we balance that? How do we take the wisdom of transcending the mind?
That inner peace.
And balance it with the need to actually engage fully with life, with all the complexities of being human and the world around us.
That's the question to sit with.